If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you so much for checking out this this series and this episode. If it's your first time here, I do hope you enjoy what you hear enough, maybe get inspired to hit that subscribe button. We put out three new interviews every single week, one Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It is a great way to keep up with all of your favorite artists, discover some new ones, know what's happening in the music world. You can find us at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or anywhere you like to get your podcast from. Just type in Kyle Meredith with hit subscribe. Again, we'll bring you three every single week. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today I'm going to be talking with LP. She's got a lot going on. In fact, there's a brand new single. It's called The One That You Love, and we're going to talk about that song and especially why she went back to write with her partners on that. It's the same trio, including herself, that produced her arguably biggest hit, Lost on You. And we'll get into her melting pot of genres that kind of goes along with this brand new song. She released a live album this summer called Live in Moscow. It is an amazing testament of everything that she can do vocally, musically, theatrically. In fact, there's one of my favorite quotes in this interview where she says, "I am a rock opera." She also covers Kings of Leon, Sex on Fire, and the Rolling Stones' Paint It Black within the live album. We'll talk about covering both of those artists. And releasing a record live in Moscow in 2020 can't go unnoticed as not a political statement. It's Russia at a time when the U.S. and Russian relations are contentious. So I also want to bring that up. Now, outside of all of this, she's done a handful of guest spots. One is with the pre-Linkin Park band for Chester Bennington, the late Chester Bennington, called Grey Days. She's on their brand new record. She also collaborated with Morrissey on his California Sons covers record. I'm going to ask about what both of those processes were like, having Celine Dion record one of her songs recently, and what we can glean from a record that she says might be out in March. Also, a quick note that you can watch this interview that we recorded on YouTube. So let's get into it. It's Kyle Meredith with LP.
Hey, what's up, man?
Really enjoying the new single. Let me tell you that first. I know there's some fun little stories behind this one, too. That one involves you writing and recording this in Mexico and with the trio, as the press release will tell us, that's behind maybe one of your biggest hits so far with Lost on You. What makes that collaboration special? What makes that songwriting partnership something that you'd want to return to?
I feel like I've extensively collaborated with many different people. I've had like collaborations with people that have been hits that I've never worked with again or never wanted to work with again or whatever, but I usually I just think with this one, it feels like, there's a lot of just emotional closeness that we have as friends. And I think the songs we've written together really mean something to me and represent me properly. And I feel like these guys like really are allow me to be myself, and Mike also as a production partner, he's like, he's a person that knows how to like kind of bring out the best in my voice and production and, the songs. And so, I don't know. I just think that like, we're almost like a band. It feels like we're a band in our like third record or something like that, and it feels, like the right move.
I mean, there is something to say, obviously, as you're pointing out here, every writing partnership can be different and the ingredients and the product that comes out of that is obviously different. I mean, there's some kind of magic in partnerships, right?
Oh yeah. I think one of my many heroes, like Keith Richards, is like two people is the best for songwriting, I think I would agree with him. Like, I think that, I like three as well, but like, I definitely like, two is great. It's like this kind of, it's just nice to be able to bop shit off of other people. I think it really helps, even if it's just like checking in with that person to like kind of formulate your direction in a way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think like really, to me, songwriting wise, very, the collaborative spirit is like inherent for me.
Yeah, I'll echo that a little bit. I mean, I'm not knocking anybody here, but when I see that a song is written by 7 to 10 different people, I always wonder, like, whose song is this? What is this anymore? Like, and that's some ignorance of me not knowing how that process works either, but there's...
I'm involved in that too, I was involved, I won't name the song that it happened on because it's a known song, but like, I had a song that was like, the manager of one of the writers was on the list of writers on the first printing of the record. I was like, all right, cool. I saw him there, So it's just wild what can happen, I don't know, it's like, I'm always like, I try to be like, I don't ever like split hairs as far as who wrote what, whoever's in the room, I believe is like part of what's the, what the deal is, to an extent, obviously. But I think sometimes you can't underestimate the vibe of like a person in a room, even if they've only like kind of guided a couple of things that you like, places you went or like a word here or there, sometimes that's like just like a good, like it's a good energy in the room. And it's like, and songs are energy, it's like even the biggest songwriters in the world don't just shit out hits, over and over again. It's like a real, I think, a spiritual craft in a way, And like I say, like if, God is in the room or whatever, it's like it makes a big difference.
Yeah, you do your craft well. And I'll bring it back to this new song with the one that you love too, because, you've talked about in a previous interview that, this was something that you allowed to conjure all the genres that you love. And I think you've talked about it before too, about how, you can be seen as writing in the pop world when you're really a rock
you know, rock musician at a heart, you know, talking about Keith Richards, obviously, that I think that goes in there. So going into this song, we'll ask specifically about this one too. Like, how much do you have to consider all of that as you're writing the song? Like, you do want it to represent these different worlds, but it still needs to be, you know, with that rawness in it.
I don't know. I think, you know, I've gotten to the place for myself where I truly feel like I've blurred the genres enough with my own career and my own persona that I don't feel beholden to anybody, for one, or like I don't, like, because I'm not, but I don't feel like I have to worry about like staying in my lane, you know. So I just let it rip and let the chips fall where they may, you know. Like, I just feel, and it's very freeing, it's nice, because I feel like I have you know, I have a little bit of everything. I got like this like kind of melting pot of like all these genres in my sound, and then I just kind of go where my heart goes, which is nice, you know. And it took a minute to get there. I mean, even like, you know, my first like three major label deals were like a bit of a wash, because I couldn't understand that. I couldn't even understand it. You know, they wanted a clear direction, you know. And I think a lot of people are like blurring genre lines these days too. It's like less rigid, and it's nice, because it's really, you know, it's about a song. I mean, you know, why do you need to like stick to any kind of genre anyway? Because they don't, you know. It's just like, I think that because, like, you know, if you're like a voice, you know, like, I mean, you've heard it, everybody's heard it. Like, if you got like a certain singer, like sometimes every song starts to sound the same just because it's that singer, and then they're staying in their what they normally do. And, you know, they don't need to, because, you know, I know, like, you know, like the guy from Journey, you know, it's like, I fucking know that's a Journey song, god damn it, you know. It's like a lot more people are kind of straying off their, you know, whatever the path of like having to stick to something because, you know, it's dictated by record labels or whatever it is. You know, I think that, you know, songs are ultimately the ultimate currency in whatever, and I think a great song will not be stopped by the fact that it's colors outside the lines of someone's self-dedicated or industry-dedicated genre sound.
I mean, it used to be, you know, genre was as tied in as much as the t-shirt that we were wearing, you know, as identification or something like that. And I know seems like, yeah, if we look back on history, the shuffle button really kind of changed the game on that, and thank, yeah, goodness that it did, you know. I'll bring up the live album, because you can really get a sense of that in Live in Moscow. Like, if you ever had a doubt of who you were, like, this is a perfect representation. And it's not easy to make a live album that connects in a way. And I think every artist wants that. I mean, half the time you hear people talk about they want to make their studio albums more like they are live, but the live album comes out and it doesn't. This is an amazing record. I mean, just, it's one of those things, like the first time I hear it, it's like, oh my God, you know, this is what's going on here. So, you know, that's got to be a part of it too, because it almost sounds like this is like a rock opera in a way. Was it designed like that?
It wasn't designed like that. I am designed like that. I am a rock opera. In, like, I mean, no question about it. That's how I write. That's how, you know, but, you know, it's just like, I don't necessarily like advertise that, because I don't feel like I have to, for one. But I do think that when you see my live show, that's what you get, you know. Like, I'm like a rock artist, really, but in this kind of like alternative-ish, pop-ish, kind of like operatic bend to the vocal-ish thing. And oh yeah, my lady says that's because I know how to write good music. Yeah. Thank you from Green Hill Ghetto.
So it becomes pop because it gets popular. But
See, I'm going to just hand it over to her in 2 seconds. But yeah, I think that, you know, it's, the nature of how I sing must dictate that, but it's also, there's like a big, you know, anthemic bend to like a lot of the songs. You know? Mm-hmm.
But when you're putting together this set specifically though, I mean, it sounds like there was more thought that went into it than just here's my songs. I mean, this thing does play like a big arc.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I mean, well, you know, we put that together with a musical director, Stacey Jones, who's a great musical director. And, you know, that's the thing. It's like you have when you build a show, that's another thing that I think also has starts to seep into your sound, you know, because it's like you start getting bigger. And then I remember, like, you know, before I put out Heart to Mouth, you know, there was a Lost in You record. And I just remember thinking, like, during some of the bigger, I mean, everything was kind of like, there wasn't a lot of ballads on that record, but I'm always curious when an artist goes off into doing more ballads when they've been like kind of like a rock act, you know. I felt quite the opposite. I felt like this responsibility to like keep this kind of like the embers, like, you know, and the fuel going. And that's like, I think Heart to Mouth, like, wrote a lot of like bigger songs, you know, in order to keep that going. And even like I'm working on a record right now and I feel the same way. There's like, I don't really believe in writing songs for a live capacity, you know, because I feel like I was taught that a long time ago, whether it's right or not, but like it seemed like that was a good way to be like kind of like in a bar band. Sorry to say that, but like, you know, it's like you need to write songs that are like crafted to be a great song on stage and off. But I think that like, but there is a responsibility to me to build a show. It's like a performance. It's like, you know, I am going to write a rock opera at some point. You know, I just feel like right now I'm dealing with what's in front of me.
I was hoping you would do that at some point. I was going to ask anyway, but you know, and well, I'm not contradicting you here and anything, but you do find a couple of moments to slip in a few of those bar band tricks. And I mean that in the, in the covers, you know, like Sex on Fire is on here, Paint It Black. Now Paint It Black, that made sense to me a lot, especially given what that song, the song that you're coming out of. And it sounded like, because that made sense. Sex on Fire, I hadn't looked at the track list. So that was a real surprise to me. What was the thought that went into that?
You know, we were just like, I was trying to draw some parallels of as far as like, you know, of the whole thing, nice, of that it's a rock show, ultimately, you know, like that's the thing. That's what I was talking to this director, the musical director about, where I just felt like I was explaining that to him and we were like, well, why don't we try to, because I've always wanted to do covers, but I figured it was nice to work in snippets of covers, you know, just to get people, you know, I remember, you know, we worked in a Lauryn Hill song instead of that song at one point, X Factor or whatever. And it was interesting because it was like, it didn't go over as well in Europe because I didn't feel like people were getting that song as much, you know. So Sex on Fire, I don't know. It's just, you know, I think I've always wanted to like work in a couple of covers and then, you know, you get into that one and it just kind of stuck. It's like a nice palate cleanser. It's just like, just having fun with it, man, you know. I think of Black, you know, I'm a huge Stones fan for sure. And so that's always, and it's also so universal. Like nobody doesn't know that song. You know?
Right. No, they were perfect moments. And it is that moment where it just kind of builds in a different way. I mean, I can keep throwing the compliments on this record. I love this record. I really, really do.
I feel like the other person that had this strong reaction was my manager and which I'm sure you guys would get along, but yeah, he was really like, you know, it was really, I mean, I always wanted to do it, but I didn't, you know, I mean, I didn't picture this year in a lot of ways, but I didn't picture doing it this year, but it was a good idea.
Yeah. I don't want to pass up the opportunity here to talk about some bigger picture stuff too, because obviously, you know, you've got a very big audience in Moscow as you show right here, but there's also the side of things. You're releasing a live album, a Russian, you know, set live album in 2020 when that's a big political do you consider the political statement that goes along with that?
You know what? I honestly don't, because I feel like it's, you know, what I was trying to convey, especially with like releasing a Moscow record, is that, you know, music goes down all over the world, man. You know, it's like, and people appreciate music all over the world. And I mean, you know, when I first started like doing well in Russia, people were like, really? You're doing well in Russia. Like you, everyone's cool with you in Russia. I was like, yeah, I think they are, you know? So I stick to the music, you know? Mm-hmm. I stick to people. I care about people and music. And I, you know, and I do care about politics, of course, but I do believe that, you know, when I look at my own country and I look at like all the good people in it, and I look at what like, and I'm aware of what's going on, and then I see all the other sides of people that I don't care for, and you know, and who's in charge and stuff. I can separate it, you know. I can separate people that I relate to that have you know, that we are just enjoying music together, even if they're not like-minded when they leave the venue. You know, it's just like something that I choose to kind of cultivate and believe in, that like, that we are all kind of, we can all connect on a certain level, even if we don't connect on other levels. And maybe we do as well connect on those levels, but it's like not something that I'm personally willing to delineate as far as music goes. Like, I feel like that's what culture, that's what art is about, is another tier of connection for us when we are, you know, often just absolutely, like, you know, separated by our leaders, and, you know, also sometimes by our personal beliefs. But I think that I'm trying always to find a way out the window with music toward, you know, the goodness in myself and others. So to me, it's like a perfectly great and timely thing to do, as far as like, just to remember that, you know, someone like me can like get 6,000 people in a room to listen to my music, even in the current, you know, state of the world. And I can get even more in the room. You know, I could have done that a couple of nights, you know, and it's mind blowing to me. And it's, I think it's inspiring to me and to, I hope, other people, you know. And there's people wanting experiences in other countries that are not something that they get to see all the time.
I was particularly happy that it was that, not that I have anything for against, but it was just that opportunity to show a lot of what you're saying too. I mean, my thought is, you know, people do care about people. Most people of the world don't let their government speak for them anyway. They just want to live their life and everything. And I think that gets lost in the big conversation, you know, so.
And we talk about that all the time. I mean, I think we like don't, you know, I mean, again, I was struck when I first started going to Russia. I was like, oh, wow, everyone's cool here and sweet. You know, like, I mean, you know, obviously not. It's like, but I was encountering a lot of very good vibes and everything, and just people wanting to loving the music and having nothing else to say about it.
Well, it is a beautiful, beautiful testament, the entire package right there. I do want to quickly hit on a few of the other things that you've had kind of seep out in the last over the last year. First off, you're part of Gray Days, which is the pre-Linkin Park, Chester Bennington. You're on the song called Amends. How did you end up getting a part of with that group of people?
Well, I didn't know, but I guess Chester loved Lost in You, listened to Lost in You, loved my voice, and was like telling people about it. And then, you know, those guys wanted to put out that a record of their that stuff, and they were looking into duets, and I think they just were like, you know, I bet Chester would be kind of stoked to have LP on the track, because he was like really into her stuff and whatever. And so they reached out, and I was just like, it was kind of wild to, like, you know, to hear. I had no idea that he even knew I was alive, let alone like my music. So it was, you know, pretty cool for me too. And singing with him, you know, posthumously was just something that was like very wild. And his voice is so, like, I already thought he had a great voice and appreciated it, but like after I sang with him, I was really like, wow, this guy's voice was really, really special.
What an interesting, powerful moments, you know, and that you had to be a part of. The other one, you were on Morrissey's cover album, with California Sun. What was it like working with Moss?
Well, I mean, the best part was really just like hanging out with him. You know, I feel like I don't feel like I was necessarily like, you know, it was supposed to be a duet. I didn't feel like it was that much of a duet, even though I don't think it was because of Morrissey. I know it wasn't. I think it was because of the producer who, you know, but that's another story that I won't get into. But yeah, Morrissey, what a legend, you know. And like, and, you know, I don't want to hear about like the political part, like, you know, like we connected on music and about like art, and we, you know, I just like, you know, got to like kind of drink with this guy who's like a badass. I was like, wow, you know, and like just like talk music with him. I mean, I really listened, because he's just like a kind of like an audiophile kind of guy, you know. And he's just like, you know, he was playing my video in between like Bowie and the Ramones, like at the beginning of his shows when he was on tour, and that I was just like, wow, holy crap, you know. And I was very like, you know, chuffed about that, I guess. You know, yeah. As I said. But he's just like, you know, he's an insane poet, an insane writer, and I was just, you know, honored to be on the record with him, just on an artistic level, and just getting to, like, kind of, like, you know, bask in his intellect for a few days was, you know, quite a treat.
I've got this, there's this interest I have. I mean, I'm a very big, I mean, Morrissey music fan, Smiths, et cetera. What you alluded to, the political side of it, is very contradictory to the company he keeps. And I noticed that a lot. A lot of the people that, you know, he's close with, that he's friends with, that he collaborates with.
And it's confusing, you know, like, it's confusing as you make your way in this business, you know, with things like that, you know. And again, I'm not of the school of, like, head in the sand, but I am a live and let live kind of person, you know. And, you know, I think in this day and age, you can blame no one for anything at this point. I mean, you know, you have your own side, but, like, it's just like, I didn't walk in his shoes. I don't know what his deal is. So, yeah. But I really, you know, I've always liked his work, and it was pretty cool. And it's funny, because when he asked me to do It's Over, he didn't know that I'd already done a version of it for myself. So I was just like, hell yeah, I love that song, you know? Like, it's a great song.
And, you know, I'll use that word that we did earlier, and I'm not the first one to bestow it upon you, but when you think about operatic voices, I mean, you couldn't have chosen two more perfect, you know, artists right there. I mean, the two of you all just, if there was a way to battle it out, I would pay money to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'll just quickly point out, I know last year, Celine Dion, you wrote to Change My Mind. Yeah. Celine's latest record, and again, yeah. That's got to just go back to, like, what a dream of a career.
Yeah, I mean, it was really cool. It's like, you know, like, everybody's sending me all this, because, you know, she kept talking about me on TV, and I was like, oh wow, you know. And I mean, you know, I've always been an admirer of her voice, for sure. I wish I would have known she was going to choose a song, because I really would have, like, kind of written one for her more, because that song, although I do like that song, I feel like we could have wrote a better one together, but yeah, man, she nailed it, and she's just like, I don't know her, but she seems so freaking nice.
Mm, you know? Right. Well, like how you just slipped that out in the universe, that you could write another one for her specifically.
Yeah, I think I should.
You did mention at the beginning of the interview that you're working on the new record. We have the first single. Well, first thing, we have a single, the one that you love, which I am assuming is part of these sessions and everything. What can we expect? I mean, what can you say so far about this next record?
Yeah, I mean, I think this song, you know, I'm still working on kind of making it, like, sound different, or like a little bit like the acoustic version, because it's a belter. I'm used to, like, you know, you can see me kind of like straining to restrain myself in this acoustic version, you know? So I'm still learning how to sing it acoustically in a way. But I do, you know, this song kind of got inspired when we were in Mexico recently, like writing. We wrote like 8 songs there for the record. But it's like, we were like at a restaurant across the street from where we were like recording. And it was just like, this guy was singing ranchero music, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. He had the little nudie suit on, the little guitar, and the hat and everything. He just, like, I'm probably, like, I'm still, like, you know, honoring him, but he just, like, he was so cool and had all this passion. So when we went back over to record, to write, we just, like, kind of, I think, carried his spirit with us a little bit, you know, and that song kind of popped out, and it just, you know, it felt good at the time. I've been feeling very creative for a while now, so just kept it moving.
Well, I look forward to what else came out of these sessions and everything. Yeah. I mean, I guess we're all looking maybe a 2021 release on a new record. I mean, I think that's the optimistic view.
We're looking at like March. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, but I think we'll probably release another single possibly before the end of the year, but not sure as far as, like, you know, because things are doing well with this song right now, so we'll see, but there'll be more out ASAP.
Awesome. I can't wait for it. In the meantime, LP, thank you so much. Congratulations on this song, especially congratulations from Live in Moscow. I'm going to go listen to it again.
Yeah. I'm so psyched to like it. It makes me happy.
Definitely. It was great talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
All right. Take care of yourself out there.
Cool. Take care. You too.
My thanks to LP. Again, the brand new live album is called Live in Moscow, and the latest single, The One That You Love. Thanks to you as well for checking out this episode. Before you get out, please, please do hit that subscribe button. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you like to get yours, just type in Kyle Meredith with hit subscribe. We'll bring you a brand new interview every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. Again, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of them, at Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Jen, and I love horror movies.
I'm Mikey. I'm dead inside, and I also love horror movies.
And we really like to torture our friend Todd because he hates horror movies.
That I do. And that's why they call me the horror virgin.
That's the only reason we call him that.
I'm not, no other reasons at all.
Whatever. So every
week, we take him through the encyclopedia of horror, the good, the bad, the ridiculously Jack Frosts.
And then we make fun of it more or less.
Or explain its deceptive feminism.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. That's what I do. That's my thing.
And I'm the funny one. Our episodes drop on Monday, so check us out.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.